Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 14, delivered on February 29, 2016. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, review for Exam 1. Exam 1 is 5 questions or problems. You answer 4 of them. Now, there's a rubric online, and I'll make sure that it's available easy for you to access, that gives you the details of how to answer questions that I give you. These are short essay answers. In fact, they're so short, they're one sentence, one complete sentence. Proper grammar and spelling. It always happens on the first exam, about half of you ignore those, and then I knock off points, and then you're all pissed off about it. Welcome to the business world. Now, as far as that rubric goes, you answer with a complete sentence. You don't misspell. You don't use text language. If you want to say and, you write A-N-D, not a little plusy symbol or something like that. Don't start a sentence with I believe or I feel. Give me what I want to know and walk away. If you're answering in more than one sentence, well, you're probably going off on some tangent. And don't give me 2 sentences hiding putting a comma to make it look like one sentence. That's the technical side of it. That's 5 points of the 20 points for each of the questions you answer. Now, as far as the 20 points are concerned, there was a lecture on Wednesday of last week that you didn't have because of the snow day. There's a podcast on that, but there was a little new material in that lecture, but I won't hold anyone responsible for the new material. However, there was summary of some old material in there, so it's worth your while to listen to that podcast tonight or tomorrow, just so you can get some more summary information under your belt. Now, the way this works is I give you what I want, think you should know. 20 questions that would pass, or 20 ideas for problems. Now, that doesn't mean that all 20 will be there, and that doesn't mean that everything will be from the 20, but it's a very good overview of my expectations. I'll go through that with you, and then it's open to you. You ask me questions. Now, if you ask me, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I will tell you, no, I'm not going to ask that. So it's worth your while to make this an interactive experience, because you'd be surprised at how that can help cut down on the studying you do for this exam. Now, some of the questions, as you'll hear when I go through these, some of the questions are just basically a definition. Just tell me what this term means or something like that, or state this concept to me clearly. Then there will be one or two that will be a little more, you have to think about it. You have to give me the right answer. You can miss by a mile, you lose all the points, or you can hit it on the head. So you got to watch that. Those critical thinking problems are the ones that can burn you if you miss the point that I'm looking for. Well, actually, I could put the exam up here on the overhead. You could see it. Okay, well, I guess you don't want me to do that. Okay, never mind. Okay, let me go through a few questions with you. What is the relationship between risk and return? Again, what is the relationship between risk and return? I caution you that you could get this problem or lose a lot of the points if you just answer risk and return. There are specific types of risk, and there are specific type of return that I'm talking about. You have to address and sharpen up. It's just like so when someone at your office asks you a simple question, and you can't just answer the simple question. You have to explain, well, there's this detail that you left out that's critical to you understanding. So if I say, what is the relationship between risk and return? You need to come back with me with a little bit sharper explanation of risk and return. Keep that in mind. Don't be bluffed by the simplicity of words sometimes. I'm going to ask you something along the line of, you're looking at a Yahoo Finance screen for a stock. You're considering investing in. And I'm going to say, what are two information items other than the price that you would look at first or would be important for you to look at? Now, the screen has, I think, 12 little information pieces. I'm asking you for what are two that would be of particular interest or would be particularly important to you with respect to being an investor. Now, you might want to actually just go to Yahoo Finance and look up a stock, and it'll jog your memory because I've been putting them up. I've done this more than a few times. So you're going to be familiar with the screens and look for those pieces of information. What were the ones that I was focusing on, that I kept talking about, that I asked you questions about, that I challenged you on? That will help you out a lot. Okay, just to have a look at that. And then you should be able to answer that question relatively quickly. What are the two pieces of information? Why are those important? Other than the price, of course, the price is rather important too. But I will specifically say, don't tell me price is one of them. I'm going to say, okay, I'm showing you a stock price chart, and you see a lot of volatility, an extraordinary amount of volatility. And yet you have some piece of information right there on the screen that tells you this is not a risky stock. This is actually a very safe stock. Does someone have a frickin' harp? Where was I before that happened? How could you have a highly volatile stock, but clearly there's a very respectable, much used information piece that is telling you this is a safe stock. How could that be? I talked about this in two lectures. Why price volatility is not the story that an investor wants to know. Okay? Those are a couple of the, that one's one of the toughies. But if you know the answer, don't give me the answer. Yeah. Okay. You're looking at a price chart for a common stock of a company, and you see that it is highly price volatile. But there's information, one of the information items is telling you this is a very safe stock. How could that possibly be? Extreme price volatility, but it's a very safe stock. It's a low-risk stock, I should say. A low-risk stock. Now, something else. I'm going to want you to give me a couple of reasons, two reasons why accounting financial statements are inadequate for financial analysis. I want you to give me a couple of reasons, two reasons, why accounting financial statements are inadequate for good financial analysis. Why are accounting financial statements inadequate for good financial analysis? Now, certainly we use them, don't get me wrong, you've seen me use them, but they're not enough. They are flawed. They are inadequate for what we need. Now, I'm going to ask you to distinguish between debt and equity in terms of claim on cash flows and tell me how that makes them different in terms of risk as investments. I'm going to ask you to distinguish between debt and equity in terms of claim on cash flows and how that differentiates them in terms of risk to an investor. You notice these are actually kind of deep questions. You should be able to handle these, but you've come a long way in just a short amount of time. The average person out there would be dead in the water on any one of these. Kind of almost a no-brainer, I could ask you, what is money? And give me the three types of it. What is money? And give me the three types. And don't say M1, M2, and M3. Those are monetary aggregates. Those are inventions, artificial labels. I want you to tell me, what are the traditional? Now, actually, remember, I said there is actually kind of a fourth one now, but we're going to pretend we're still in the 20th century, like everyone else in the business department does. Another one that's kind of one of those quickies is, I could ask you, is what are the three tools of monetary that the Fed can use to conduct monetary policy? What are the three tools the Fed can use? The Federal Reserve, and don't say Fed, Federal Reserve, can use to conduct monetary policy. Yeah. Yes, that's how you would not put a list, because I would eat your ass. Don't give me a list and then be pissed off if I take off all the points, which I will, because I'm a bastard and an asshole. Yes.
So for that question, you
I wish you would. Let me explain something. Since I started teaching, the first class I ever taught at Ohio State, now if you know anything about Ohio State, it has the biggest room here is the Caterpillar Auditorium, which looks like one section of the big lecture halls at Ohio State. When you've got 500 students, you don't have time to read dissertations. Some of the students, and quickly I learned, and then in business world, I got a lot of bitching. And I understand their point. When someone in important says, I sent this email message to this employee, and he gives me back this two-page email. I just wanted a quick answer. I'm trying to get you to sharpen up, tighten yourself down so that you say what you have to say, and then get on with something else that you have to do. Now, that can be a real difficult thing to do. I understand that. And so the skills, I'm giving you a skill set here, and I've had a lot of students come back to me later and say they appreciated this, but you won't at first. Give two reasons why rising interest rates suppress business activity. I'm going to repeat every one of these a couple of times. Give two reasons why rising interest rates suppress business activity. Again, I brought this up in several of the lectures, which are always available to you on podcast. You could actually listen to every one of the lectures of this course before the exam. Whether or not you want to is another matter entirely. But two reasons why rising interest rates suppress business activity. Just saw, by the way, I was perusing some of the pop websites for finance. I think it was on Yahoo Finance in their news articles. They said two respected leading economists said that the stock market is going to crash 80% sometime this year. I know, right? Yeah, I saw a couple of you roll your eyes. Now, don't do that. However, rising interest rates, which is an environment in which we are now, do suppress business activity. And you've got a couple of ways that that would happen. Another question, a related question, now I understand I wouldn't ask you two questions that are very similar, but a question that is related to that, that is on my list here, is how is the value of an asset affected by interest rates? How is the value of an asset affected by interest rates? Now, that question, in particular, I left out a word which would typically be left out. But if you put it in there, it would really, really help you answer the question. Again, the way I framed it is, how do changes in interest rates affect the value of assets? Okay? Now, that word value, there's a word that could go in front of that that would really help you answer the question. If you ask about value, what you're really asking about isn't value. It's something value. And keep in mind that the past is dead and the future is but a dream. I think there's a song like that, or a sappy poem. Anyway, I want you to explain. Here's one that's kind of almost one of those more like a no-brainer. That's an easy pick-off question. What is liquidity? And give an example of a highly liquid instrument, or I might say, give me an example of a highly illiquid instrument. What is liquidity? And give an example of a highly liquid instrument or a highly illiquid instrument. I would put it one way or the other. And you should be able to give me, as a matter of fact, one example of each is with you right this minute. A highly liquid instrument is with you, and a highly illiquid instrument is with you. Right here, as we are sharing this time together. Isn't that interesting? Explain each of the components of the risk premium. Give and explain each of the components of the risk premium. Now, I went through this twice, once in week two, and then I came back around, swung back around to it later, the risk premium. Every interest rate carries the risk-free rate, and then it carries a risk premium. I want you to tell me what those three pieces are and explain each of them. Very short. Don't go into some, if you're going to use one sentence, obviously you're not going to want to go into some long-winded. And the names of each of them is almost kind of like self, it's almost self-explanatory, the names of each of the components. Now, I'll ask you something like this. The coupon on a certain bond is less than the yield to maturity. Or I could say the coupon on a certain bond is greater than the yield to maturity. I could ask it either way. What do you know about the price of the bond? The coupon on a certain bond is less than the yield to maturity. What do you know about the price? Or I could say the coupon on a bond is greater than the yield to maturity. What do you know about the price? This is a slam bam, like, okay. A 9-word sentence should answer. You could even give it in less, fewer than 9 words. If you wanted to use a possessive apostrophe in an inappropriate place, but anyway. Another question, as the term of a bond approaches zero, what happens to the price of it? As the term of a bond approaches zero, what happens to the price? Again, that is a short, just finish it, kill it, kick some dirt on it, and walk away for cheeseburgers. A company has decided to use equity to fund a project. What are the options available to it to raise the funds? A company has decided to use equity to fund a project. What are the options available to it? And I will tell you right now, it has three ways to do it. A company has decided to use equity to fund a project. What are its options? And I will tell you right now, it has three ways. Two of them might come to you, but I talked about a third. I mentioned it. But there are three ways a company can raise equity funds. Three ways. In other words, there are three sources of equity financing. What is the relationship between accounting profit and economic profit? That's a seven-word answer. That's a seven-word answer. Again, what is the relationship between accounting profit and economic profit? It's a seven-word answer. I'm not asking you to and explain why. I'm just asking you, tell me, okay? Sometimes I kind of look for you to work, give me a little bit more than just an answer from someone would give who lived in Peoria. I want you to give me an hate. There are people here from Peoria. Dear God, is there no place in this? Okay, fine. The next one I'll mention. Next time I'll mention Lincoln. Okay. In this one though, don't go into detail, because if you know the relationship, you know why. It's pretty apparent. You know what the relationship is. If you know the relationship, it's pretty apparent. You know why that is, and why that's important to us in finance. But I don't ask you that. Now, one that's almost like a classic, I'm not saying I would give it, but what does beta measure? Watch it. You've got to make sure that you give the complete answer. It's still not a long answer. Saying beta measures risk, that's a paddling. Give three interest rates that could be used by banks as a basis for determining rates on loans, interest rates on loans. Give three interest rates banks could use as the basis for determining the interest rates on loans they make. I focused on three, but I actually mentioned like another one, and then I kind of waved my hand at another one that was out there. I didn't even go into much detail on that one, but I've brought up four that are used. Three, one is big here in the U.S. One is big here in the U.S., and I whined and farted about that one quite a bit, and I showed you a chart of it. What is the term for matching surplus economic units with deficit economic units? And what are the three factors needed for a successful match? Again, what is the term for matching surplus economic units with deficit economic units? And what are the three factors that determine a successful match? Now, I could give you a question where I describe a loan. And I will ask you, what type of debt security is this? And who is the buyer and who is the seller of the debt security? I'll describe a loan between two parties, and I'll ask, okay, what kind of a debt instrument is this? Remember, there are three different types, kind of broadly, in terms of term of the loan. And also, which of the two parties is the seller and which one of the two parties is the buyer of the debt security? This is, again, one of those things where separating you from almost anyone out there wouldn't know what kind of loan it is, and certainly couldn't fathom why one of them is the buyer and why the other one is the seller. But you should be able to. And finally, distinguish between systematic and non-systematic risk. Distinguish between systematic and non-systematic risk. Now, that, for a successful answer, I would anticipate that you would explain risk. Remember, risk means nothing to us, only a certain type of risk. And even with respect to that certain type of risk, I got something here in my pocket. It's a pill. Would you like to take it, please?
No.
No, under no circumstances?
No.
It won't kill you.
No.
No, seriously, noob. It's you look like an adventurous kind of guy.
Depends what it is.
Well, I'm not sure how I rubbed off the skull and crossbones, because underneath it gave the name of it. It was something kind of scientific, but after that it said, dude.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Definitely not.
No, definitely. Really? The hell with the risk takers in this audience. Risk means nothing. Surely if I offered you and you're saying, don't call me Shirley. Okay, fine. Frankly, if I offered you, say, $25,000, you might take it. With the promise that I've got 911 on speed dial and all that. In other words, I'm trying to diversify away non-systematic risk. But you see, risk means nothing to us. Make sure that you convey to me that you understand that risk is an irrelevant term. What we look for, what we ask is, what do I get for this risk? That's the way life is. It's not about risk. It's what do I get for risk? Now, some of us will say, yeah, to small risk. Others will say, no, but if you push it far enough, they might be willing to take risk. You see, risk has to be associated with something that you get in return. So make sure that when you answer a question about risk, that you are conveying to me that you understand that risk is meaningless without talking about what you get for it or what you expect to get in return for it. You take risks all the time, but you don't take stupid risks unless you are uninformed or from Decatur. But the point here is that you take risks. What are you getting in return for it? And so when we talk about, you answer a question like risk, always make sure that you are giving a nod to why the risk is being taken in the first place. No one would take risk unless there was something to gain from the risk. Some people will take risks at a higher level than others. And that's what we do in the investment world. We have some high-powered, heavy risk takers. They love risk. They absorb risk. But they don't do it for stupid reasons. They do it for rewards. Other people, I could give you that same risk and that same reward, and you would say FTS. Fancy that scenario. You would not do that. But there are others who will take the risk for the high return. That's a big thing now. Anymore, kind of even in my professional lifetime, the whole world of finance has kind of turned on this new thing where risk is being moved from those who don't want it to those who do want it. And for example, one of the most powerful business models, if you take finance, and especially if you finally end up with me at the higher end of the finance food chain in advanced financial theory and practice, in a business like, let's say, trucking, you're a truck driver, okay? As a matter of fact, you own a trucking company. And in fact, what you do is you deliver things in your trucks. As a matter of fact, that's your logo. We deliver things in our trucks. Okay? I saw this. I swear, this has been years ago. I don't know if the company's still around. I was driving down this road in Texas. And it was this giant truck. Back, you know, they have those huge, they let you have like 20 million axles. Came by me, and it said, guaranteed overnight delivery. And then underneath it, it said, if God can't do it, guaranteed overnight delivery, who can? I thought, you should be hit by lightning, you son of a bitch, you know? But anyway, you drive truck. Your business is delivering stuff. So if fuel prices, gasoline prices, diesel prices, let's say, go up, your profit goes down, higher cost. But if diesel prices go down, your profit goes up. The problem with that is that you're not in the business of speculating on the price of hydrocarbon distillates. That's not your business. Your business is driving trucks. So wouldn't it be nice if you could take diesel gasoline costs out of the equation of your business model? You can. We do it all the time. They're called futures contracts. So that, in other words, you take a position so that if diesel prices go down, you gain money on your driving expenses, but you lose money on the investment. But if diesel prices go up, obviously you lose money in your business, but you win on your futures investments. So in other words, it levels it out so that that's no longer part of your concern as a business person. We do the same thing with farmers, too, these days. Corn prices go up, the farmer's great. Corn prices go down, the farmer's bankrupt. What we can do is create opposite positions so that when corn prices go up, the farmers lose on the futures contract, gaining on the farm grain. But if prices go down, the farmer loses on the farm grain but wins big on the futures contract. It's called hedging. Risk, moving risk from those who don't want it to those who do. You don't want the risk? There are futures buyers and sellers out there, all just huge numbers of them with incredible amounts of money who are willing to take the risk for you for a small fee, the futures contract brokerage fees. You got the idea? So risk is a huge thing now. Talk to me. What do you want to ask me? Any questions you have for me? I want them, if you got something that you were curious about, that you need to know. Yeah. Oh, I asked you. Yeah, I know. I'm not going to give you the answers too, but and don't come to my office on Wednesday. I want to run some of these answers by you, see what you think of them. I will bite your ass for that. Don't. You should be able to work this out and remember that you working in groups is great. The downside of working in groups is that you might be the smartest person in your group. That should scare the hell out of you. Because oftentimes I've found that the stupidest person in a group is the one who has the most opinions that sound believable. Hence some of our presidential candidates right now. Just keep that in mind when you're studying for the exam. Also, I do allow you a 4x6 note card. Oh, damn. Better write that down, then, for... You do not bring anything but that in. No calculator, no smartphone, no computer, no telepathic ability to your friends. Just your card and a pencil. For God's sake, if you're going to use a pen, don't make mistakes and then scribble all that. Do you have any questions? You're all good then. That's all I have for you. I thank you.